Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Julie Dante Douglas.
That's your nickname today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make me Robert Virgil Lamb?
Yes. Yeah. I dig that. Okay. I dig that. And, you know, we're talking about hell. Aw, hell.
Yep. We just did a whole episode, which I think is going to be like an hour long, about the problem of hell and about just our belief in hell and where it comes from, why it's problematic, and what some of the, what a couple of studies say about how it may affect the way we go about our daily lives. And so in this episode, we're taking on the science of hell, where we're going to look at some scientific explorations about the structure of hell, how mm-hmm. it works, how big it is. A lot of this deals with Dante, but some of it gets a little Miltonian as well.
It does. And we're covering this because it's sort of the ultimate magical thinking. We've talked about magical thinking before, about ascribing these supernatural properties to this construct. All right. And here we have an extension of our mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's troubled by being physically tethered to this body. This is my read of hell, by the way.
Okay.
So we're unable to escape our physical selves or even our minds. And in that, there's a certain amount of pain to be processed, physical pain and mental pain. And to me, this, the repository for all of this is hell. It's the pit. And we have put so much effort into hell that we've actually mapped it out, or rather those of us who came before us, like Dante, have mapped it out just so that we can place that angst and that pain in very specific pockets.
Yes. Well, I think that's a pretty good read on it. Yeah. And certainly we've put a lot of effort into mapping it out, creating depictions of it. And a lot of it stems from the fact that if you're an artist or if you're a writer, you're a poet, the idea of hell is just a rich territory to play around in. And if you're living in a time when, say, the Catholic Church holds sway over pretty much everything, it's one of the few acceptable ways to, say, draw a grotesque monster making love to a woman. You know, that kind of stuff. In the same way that the classics allowed painters to paint the nude human body, and if it's incorporated into the right mythical or religious context, then it's okay. So before we get into all these explorations, I want to read just a quick bit from Chris Wright's Measuring Hell, which appeared in the Boston Globe, which he was talking about a publication that came out dealing with Galileo's calculations about Dante's Inferno, which we'll discuss shortly. But this particular quote, I think, sums up a lot of why we're talking about it. He says, debating the mechanics of the Inferno might sound like intellectual horseplay, the 16th century equivalent of MIT cafeteria debates about the viability of Star Trek teleporters. But there was more to the lectures than this. The insights Galileo gleaned from analyzing Dante's measurements in fact anticipated a vital principle of structural engineering. By asserting that you cannot create a giant Lucifer by supersizing the model of a man, that increasing an object's magnitude would create a whole new set of structural and material imperatives, Galileo was paving the way for the construction of everything from ocean liners to skyscrapers to Macy's parade floats. And he goes on in that article to even compare it to our attempts to understand many other things in the universe that are based in science, but we cannot see. You're trying to understand how this universe works, and so you're applying these thought experiments to aspects of it.
Which is pretty cool, because it's not just a repository for our fears, it's a thought experiment,
yeah.
Right? It's a way for us to try to figure out our physical universe.
And a lot of these studies, they do have a lot in common with some of these fun papers that you see. There's one that came out recently dealing with the created world of George R. R. Martin's Westeros in the Game of Thrones series in books. And they were trying to figure out, well, how would the celestial mechanics of this planet work to provide it with this weird seasonal cycle?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some other papers. There's a number of them that dealt with the Harry Potter universe, where they're like, well, how would the genetics of muggles and wizards
right.
work?
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, because it allows people to take their science and sort of play around with it, put it into this box and see what comes out of it.
I can't help but think that if Galileo's studies came out today, that he would have been awarded a Nobel Prize.
Yes.
But which is kind of great.
Yeah,
we talked about that. Nobel Prize is a good thing.
Is wonderful, because it's not merely, in some cases, it's a little mocking, but in most of the time, it's not about saying, look at this idiot doing this study. It's like, this is awesome. This person is taking the science, applying it to some little corner of our understanding and creating something useful out of it. Or, you know, marginally useful, but still amazing.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the troublemaker who started this all, Dante, and his publication of the Divine Comedy in 1314.
Yes, Dante Alighieri, born 1265 in Florence, Italy, died September 14, 1321 in Ravenna, Italy. And that's pretty key, because of course Dante loved Florence, and
yes.
This was his hometown, and he eventually was not allowed to return to it. And it was a bitter fact for him, and it factors into a lot of his writings. But Dante was orphaned at a young age, but he grew off with well-off relatives in Florence, and he was well-educated in the classics and poetry, and he went on to be a number of things in life. He was a businessman, he was a soldier, he was a politician, he was a philosophy professor, and of course, most importantly, he was a writer, and eventually, as I said, a writer in exile from his beloved Florence. And, of course, he was also extremely interested in the sciences, which, as we've discussed before, and when we were talking about consciousness and philosophy, to be interested in the sciences was to be interested in philosophy. They
mm-hmm.
often went hand in hand. And, for instance, he read the works of Aristotle, including Aristotle's Meteorology.
So what do you do if you are exiled from your country and you have maybe some very interesting ideas to explore? Well, you maybe map out this terrain, not so much of your country, but of your psyche. And this terrain would be in the form of hell, purgatory, and heaven. And this is the Divine Comedy. Now, comedy does not mean like funny, ha-ha. Comedy means that it's going to end well.
Yes.
Which it does in paradise. But the Divine Comedy's Inferno is the part that we really want to talk about, because it's part of this epic poem. And the detail is so florid, it's so imaginative, and it is so very complete. It reminded me of the author, and this is going to escape me, it's going to drive me nuts, so I'll follow up with this. But we talked about this in one of our mapping episodes. He spent 30 years creating this world,
A
language for it. He mapped it out in great detail, the topography. And in a way, Dante's Inferno reminds me of this, because there's so much detail packed into this, that it really became, for people, the landscape of hell. And it became such a popular text because of this.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't underscore this, the amazing level of world creation that's going on here. exceeding, at least on par, if not exceeding, the work that you see in George R. R. Martin's novels or in Tolkien's novels. Any kind of fantastic world that we think of when someone has created wholesale. Dante basically did this with the Inferno. He figured out exactly what the landscape would be. He figured out who the characters occupying it were. And to your point, it is as much Dante's psyche as place as it is an imagined version of hell. Because to read Inferno and to read the Divine Comedy as a whole is to get to know Dante's mind in and out. He doesn't hold back about his feelings about this person or that person, about this subject or this subject. And certainly along those lines, the Divine Comedy is a crash course in medieval Italian culture. Everything from the body stories and a little bit of dirt on this guy to what the church was doing, what kind of heresies were taking place in the world and were still resonating. He's at times pursuing sort of petty vendettas with individuals.
Right.
And other times he's championing individuals who are kind of scandalized, but that he had a lot of empathy for. There are plenty of characters. There are one or two characters in particular that he encounters in hell that he kind of kicks them while they're down because they weren't friends with Dante. But there are others that he's really sympathetic for.
Right. So you see some of the Florentine politicians who didn't square with him end up in hell.
See a number of popes are down there as well.
Yep. I mean, popes, they sin as well, right? In Dante's hell. Let's walk really quickly through the landscape of this so we can kind of get rooted in what is important here when we talk about the science of Dante's Inferno.
All right. So you can find maps of this everywhere. I encourage anyone listening to this who's not driving a vehicle or whatnot to look up a map, and I'll try and include one on the blog post that accompanies this. But to imagine Dante's hell, Dante's Inferno, imagine, first of all, the round Earth, the Earth that is the center of the universe, okay? And then Lucifer falls from heaven, like a rogue asteroid, and his impact forms an enormous crater in the Earth, all right? And the crater goes all the way down to the core of the Earth, and that's where Lucifer stops. That's where he hits bottom, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's this enormous crater up around him. Now, then you cover that crater with a vast vault, okay? So you have this vaulted crater in the Earth.
So now, the Earth has been pushed up for this entrance into hell.
Yeah, and some of the displaced Earth, too, has come out on the bottom, the other side of the planet, in the form of the Mount of Purgatory, but more on that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the very bottom of this crater, again, where Lucifer fell. He's down there still. His crotch is basically the center of the world.
We're not kidding.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. This is the very bottom of the crater. It's also the center of the Earth and kind of the bottom of the universe, too. And so Lucifer is frozen in the Lake of Cocytus, okay? And also you'll find other traitors frozen here as well. This is also the Well of Giants, where we find the Titans of Greek lore. And it's also the ninth circle of hell. Overall, the domain of treacherous fraud. Okay? So we're walking outward from the center and emerging out of hell, okay?
So we're going up now.
We're going up. Yeah, we're doing the reverse of Dante on this. Okay, so when we reach the edge of this domain, there's a high cliff that rises up to a region of ascending terraces, each composed of a pit, and this is the Malebolga, the eighth circle of hell, and each bolgia, each terrace that's kind of a pit unto its own, and ringing all the way around, okay? Each one is devoted to a different form of simple fraud, such as there's one for panderers and seducers, there's one for flatterers, one for sorcerers and astrologers, one for hypocrites. Worth exploring on your own, believe me. And then there are these demons who work there as well, the Malebraca, and they are in charge of tormenting the individuals that are imprisoned there. One thing you mentioned when you were looking at this, you were a little surprised to find that Lucifer at the very bottom of this is just stuck, and he's there chewing on the three great traitors of all time, Mark Antony, Brutus, and Judas.
Right, because my Satan is tethered to the version of Paradise Lost, where he's ruling and he's causing all sorts of mayhem.
Yeah, he's a sympathetic character too.
Right. Yeah.
But here, falling more in line with some of the traditional accounts of hell previous. A lot of them would either, because Dante wasn't the first person to describe a trip to even a Christian hell.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, a lot of times they would just sort of reference Lucifer or Satan from afar. They wouldn't really get into him as a character. And so here, Lucifer is very prominent, but he's not really a character. He's more just a force. He's the force that formed this whole entire region. So he's really more asteroid than character.
He's kind of in suspended animation.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, trapped in this ice. But what I do love is the imagery of not his pelvic region, but his hairy legs sticking up and them traveling across it. But we'll get into that more.
Very bestial.
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, we came out of that pit, out of Cocytus. Then we encountered the Malabolgo with all these bulges and all these little terraces where people were punished. Okay. And at the limits of this circle, again, we're moving out. We climb another steep cliff, and now we're at the seventh circle, the violent. And this is where there's violence against others, self, or God. It's a fiery plain at first. We cross that, and then we pass through the wood of the suicides, where you have these individuals who are grown into trees. And then we pass over the boiling blood river of the Phlegethon. And then there's another sheer cliff wall. Okay, and we climb that wall, then we're in the sixth circle, okay? This is the domain of the heretics, and beyond that we find the walls of Dis. Dis is this basically a medieval fortress, walled fortress, and it goes, again, it's a circle, it's a ring wall, it's all the way around. So you could almost think of this wall existing to keep the horrors of inner hell from spilling out into the outer hell. Not that it's actually doing that, but just think of that in terms of a dividing point.
Yeah, it's a fiery fortress. As you said, it's kind of where it's staff only works, right?
Yeah.
And just in the terrain, it's situated on a plateau here.
Yeah. So beyond the gates of Dis, we pass into an outer region of lighter sins. First, there's the Angry, the fifth circle. And then there's another cliff wall. And then there's the fourth circle of Avarice. And then there's another wall. And then there's the third circle of Gluttony. Then there's the second circle of lust, where the souls are whipped about in a vortex of winds. And then there's another cliff, and we find the first circle of limbo, where the noble thinkers of old reside. People who are basically, you know, they're too good for hell, but they're stuck there on a technicality. So that's where they live, on the outskirts of hell, basically. But then finally we cross the river Acheron, and we find the real, very outskirts of hell, and that's where the lukewarm are. Like, you know, the whole saying with Jesus, the lukewarm, I spit you out. You know, you're neither good nor bad. You really don't have a place in this. And that's where these guys are. They're not even bad enough to get into hell, but they're not good enough to be anywhere else.
I guess you could say ne'er-do-wells or loafers.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't really commit to any one thing, and so that's why they haven't done any wonderful deeds, and they're in heaven or anything terribly bad, and they're cast about into another level.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they're just like, yeah, we don't really have a place for you here. You can hang out outside the gates, I guess.
Yeah, so as you guys can see, this is a vast hell. We're talking about nine circles featuring three rivers, one very cold lake. There's fire, there's ice. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah,
and just to get into the detail of it would probably take us hours, but we wanted to try to at least steep you guys at the beginning here.
With a basic geography.
Yeah, with the vestibule at the very top and the city of Dis in the middle, just fiery compound. And then at the very bottom, Cocytus, the lake.
So there you go, basic geographic summary of hell. It's very important because this is the world that these scientific inquiries and papers are going to deal with. So after the break, we're going to come back. We're going to look at how the roof of hell works. We're going to look at how the weather in hell works. And we're going to look at a couple of other scientific concerns as well regarding the inferno. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and Go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, let's get back to Galileo and what might have been his Ig Nobel Prize for his studies about hell and the measurements concerning them.
Yeah, the year was 1588. Galileo was just 24 years old, hadn't really made a name for himself yet. He was a medical school dropout, and then he was invited to deliver a couple of lectures on Dante's Divine Comedy, and particularly about the structure of hell, how hell might work from an architectural, physical standpoint.
Now, just to put this in the proper context, by this time, Dante's Inferno or Divine Comedy would have been extremely well known and was the authority on hell, right? People took a lot of stock in this, is taking it really as a sort of gospel of what hell might look like. So for this upstart to come and deliver this speech about how the mathematics don't really hold up,
at the very least, this was a highly regarded text. It was it stands today. It's still one of the greatest works of Western civilization, and at the time it was still very well regarded. And so for anyone to come along and start knocking at the science of it and saying, well, you know, pointing out plot holes essentially, you know, people could get a little up in arms over that.
And to be weaving science with a little story here.
Yeah. Now, in particular, the interesting thing he did, in this talk was that he dealt with a couple of existing theories. He was not the first person to do a little science-y thinking about the structure of the Inferno. So what he did is he attacked one particular architectural model of the Inferno, one proposed by Alessandro Valtullio of Lucca. And while he supported a second model that was suggested by the Florentine architect Antonio Manetti. Now, of course, Florence, again, the birthplace of Dante. It's important to keep in mind.
Well, it's kind of like the Bloods and the Crips here, too, yeah. Because Lucca is kind of like Bloods and Florence is the Crips, and they have a long-standing rivalry.
Yeah, and Florence had just suffered a humiliating defeat by Lucca in 1430, and so this is on everybody's mind. So what does Galileo comes in and says, Vitellio's, his argument, his structure for the Inferno, that would just collapse.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who's got it right is our boy from Florence. And so he hands Manetti the victory, and then leaves, basically. Now, after the fact, he probably realized that both models would collapse, because that is a huge vault that would have to be constructed to cover this enormous crater in the earth.
Yeah, but he did. He took all the measurements that he could from the text, like the blasted canyons and the valleys and the rivers, and he did find out that they did not stand up to mathematical scrutiny. As you say, he did sort of discredit one of them, but then later on, he just quit talking about that whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he knew that both of them were wrong.
And a lot of Galileo scholars, they kind of they just kind of cast this aside as just being sort of an early, kind of fun, but not really important aspect of Galileo's life. And really, it is more of a footnote to the great things that he would do later on.
Yeah, but as Chris Wright had said, you know, it's his measurements of hell inadvertently contributed to the foundation of theoretical physics.
Exactly. All right, let's get on to the weather in hell. And I believe my wife was telling me there used to be a website where you could go and you could get the weather in hell, like whatever the weather is going to be. And it's going to be like flash floods of rancid yogurt and stuff. But
you know, even better would be David Lynch reading it.
Yes.
There's a website where you can also get the weather.
Just the weather in the normal world.
Right, read by David Lynch.
Awesome. So Dante was, of course, possessed of an amazing curiosity. And as I mentioned earlier, he'd already certainly read Aristotle's work on meteorology. He found rich poetic use of not only the weather, because certainly everyone loves to throw a little weather into a poem or whatnot, but he also understood the mechanics of weather, and he liked to play with that as well. So meteorological themes pop up throughout his work, in some of his earlier poems, and certainly in the Divine Comedy. He lacked our modern understanding of meteorology, but the relationship between water and earth, all of it factors into some of his earliest poems, and it's certainly a part of the Inferno.
So, yeah, he would have taken this knowledge and then applied it to this mapping of hell in this descent into hell. And in the article, a great article, The Weather of Hell by Randy Cervini, they actually take a look at specifically his descriptions of the weather and how it really weirdly lines up would really happen if you had hell in those weather systems. And again, we talked about sort of the basic landmarks here, but let me just describe them once more. You have the vestibule, which is at the very top. You have the city of Dis,
mm-hmm,
in the middle, and then you have Cocytus, the frozen lake, at the very bottom.
The very bottom, yeah.
Okay. And I wanted to point this out again because Cocytus, the frozen lake, and the city of Dis and all of its fieriness, these are creating two major circulation cells in hell, which the author points out is creating various winds and so on and so forth that would really line up with what would happen. So, with that in mind, let's talk about circulation cells because
yes,
we're not going to go into weather in earnest, but hey.
Right. In fact, I'm just going to briefly run through some stuff from our article, How Weather Works, that mm-hmm. I wrote. Okay. So, two key properties that govern the atmosphere: air pressure, dictated by gravity, and air temperature, dictated by solar and terrestrial radiation. But all of these gases make up the atmosphere, and they don't just stay in one place. As you certainly observed, air moves. Vertical air currents result from changes in temperature and pressure. When air heats up, its molecules move around more rapidly, pushing each other farther apart. The air becomes less dense and rises up through the troposphere toward thinner air. In doing so, however, it moves into colder regions and begins to cool, and it eventually cools down to a denser state and sinks back down. Okay, so when the air in one area heats up faster than the air in an adjoining area, the pressure differential generates wind. For example, you can just look at a modern city. All that concrete and steel absorbs much more heat than the surrounding countryside. As such, the air in that city grows hotter during the day, becomes less dense, and rises in a vertical movement known as an updraft. Meanwhile, the cooler air in the countryside outside is under far more pressure and begins to flow into the city in the form of surface wind to fill the low pressure area. Once it enters the hot city, however, it heats up and begins to rise in an updraft. The air above it cools, but it can't settle back into place due to all of the rising hot air underneath it. Instead, the cooling air simply pushes out to the side in the form of an upper air wind heading back to the countryside. And this wind cycle continues until nightfall sends everything into reverse as the city cools faster than the surrounding areas. So, to put this into the form of a simplified version of the Earth, imagine an Earth that doesn't rotate and doesn't experience night. In this example, let's also pretend that the sun heats the areas around the equator the most and the poles the least. This is a lot like the city example, except the entire equatorial belt would be the city in this scenario, and the land and sea cooling toward the poles would be the countryside. This would result in two massive bowl-shaped convection cells, one for each hemisphere. Surface flows of cool air would sweep toward the equator, heating up along the way. Upon arrival, this air would ascend in an updraft, and then it would sweep back toward the poles in a cooling upper air wind. So there's a simplified version of how air moves in the real world. It's all about pressure differentials and air swooping into one area, rising, and then swooping back across over the top.
Okay, yeah, so in a nutshell, you've got the sun, which is heating the molecules. They rise because they've got high pressure now, and mm-hmm. then you've got low pressure, more condensed air rushing in to displace it. We're talking about displaced air, and that's how right. winds are created, and that's how air moves about.
And it creates this circular movement of air.
Right. So you have a circulation cell. So you have certain areas that become this closed loop. And when you look at Dante's Inferno, you have two circulation cells. And the first one starts, of course, at the very beginning, and it ends at the city of Dis. Okay, because you have, again, all of this weather happening, this heat from the city of Dis, which is informing things at, say, the first circle of hell.
Yeah, and plus there's a boiling river next to it, so you have that adding to the possible heat as well. Hot air rises from the sixth circle just beyond the walls of Dis, and then it rolls back towards the gates of hell at a high altitude and then sinks back down at the first circle of hell, and then it sweeps across the surface till it blows through Dis and back up the sixth circle again. So that's the upper circulation cell as laid out by Cervini. But then he also says that Dante's text lays out this lower circulation cell as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Yeah, now that second loop stretches from the rising air of the fiery city of Dis as it redistributes air toward the central pit of hell, and it sinks into the bone-freezing cold of the Cocytus, or Cocytus, excuse me, lake. And then it makes its way back over Malabolga, which is the terrorist area, and then back up to the city of Dis. So that's your second circulation cell.
Yes. Now, I'll sketch out a little version of what this looks like and include this on the website so you can look at it. But it's really incredible because Cervini makes a really strong case that if you look at the meteorological details that are included in Inferno, and there are a lot of them, because Dante's clearly a weather bug, and it included all these details, along with all these other just world-building details of what Inferno consisted of. But you read the details, you read about the movements of air and the descriptions of what the wind is doing and what the temperature is doing. It clearly spells out a working two-cell air circulation system.
It does, and we could actually run through every single point or every single circle in hell, but we won't do that. But I did want to talk about a couple of them because it's really interesting. Cervini talks about in the vestibule in the first circle that these are dominated by high pressure with pretty calm winds. But when Virgil and Dante enter the second circle, they're met with a stormy blast of hell. And this is where Cervini says the strong pressure gradient causes winds as a function of the high and low pressure systems. And this is kind of a nice touch because when you go into the second circle, it's extremely windy. And this is where the lustful are punished and the winds are whipping around them, the winds of their desires. And then, of course, you go in the third circle and there's lots of showers. And that's where it's really heavy and cold wind. And it's really stank there, by the way. And then the third circle, of course, has gluttony and there's intense storms. And again, this is a result of the strong surface heat blowing back from the city of Dis and the low pressure system that exists in the valley that descends before Dante and Virgil. So again, as you say, Dante had a really good idea of how weather systems were working, a good enough idea to try to imagine it in this place and set, the territory, the geography to the weather conditions. It's kind of beautiful.
It is. I mean, it's amazing to think of because it's, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find an earlier, more fully formed world in literature and in someone's mind as the Inferno and Purgatory and Paradise as well. But certainly Inferno's the the best of the three, because it's where you have all of these rich, gross details. It's where you have demons playing trumpets with their butts. you don't encounter much of that the higher up you get. So there's less, because Dante's Inferno is rather humorous at times.
There is some good scatology in it. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it's because there's so much treacherous detail that he had to put some sort of comedy elements in there just as a little break. Now, some people would take issue with gravity.
Yes.
Because in Dante's Inferno, when Dante and Virgil are descending, they're experiencing the same kind of gravity that they would on the surface of Earth. So if they're crossing a bridge, or, you know, if they're dodging arrows, or, you know, some sort of missiles of hell, then that's all being acted on as if everything were normal. But things, of course, as we know, would not be normal if you plunged down into Earth.
Well, now, I've read arguments, though, that gravity is due to mass. And
right.
So you have the gravity on the Earth is determined by the amount of mass involved. I've read arguments, though, that if you descended deeper, it would be about the mass around you
and
that would determine how much of a gravitational pull was beneath your feet.
It would slow you down. Because there's more mass above you and around you. So your descent would be slower. In fact, we have a really good article by Nicholas Gerbis called "What Would Happen If I Drilled a Tunnel Through the Center of the Earth and Jumped Into It?" Now, that's a little bit different. We're talking about a free fall jump
right. As
opposed to just descending into
hell. But the idea is essentially the same.
It is. But in Gerbis's article, he does say that at the core, as you get to the core, the planet's center, your acceleration due to gravity is zero, and Earth's mass surrounds you, and then gravity cancels out, and you are weightless.
And a curious thing happens along these lines in Dante's Inferno. At the very end, after they've worked their way to the very bottom, the Lake of Cocytus, they see the massive Lucifer there with his three faces chewing on the three great traitors of Western civilization. They go up. And the way out is down, and they start climbing down the furry shanks of Lucifer. and remember, his crotch is the center of the planet in this model. So what happens when they reach the very center?
Well, there is up is down and down is up.
Right.
It just
switches.
As if you were in space, right?
Yeah.
And this is called the antipodes.
Yeah, this is what NASA has to say about it. This is from Angela Richard. About the center of the Earth, not about Lucifer's hinder. She says, if you could be at the exact center, the forces that each bit of Earth matter exerted on you would cancel out, up canceling down, east canceling west, etc. This only occurs for a single point, though, and you would still feel a gravitational force on the rest of your body. So there would be this point that where things would switch, and that's what happens to Virgil and Dante.
Yeah, and Cervantes says that Dante may have lifted this concept from first century writer Plutarch, who said, if a man should so coalesce with the earth that its center is at his navel, the same person at the same time has his head up and his feet up too. So, this idea that the portal kind of shifts. And this is actually taken from Dante's Inferno. It says, and when we had come to where the huge thigh bone rides in its socket at the haunches swell, my guide, with labor and great exertion, turned head to where his feet had been and fell to hoist himself up in the air so that I thought us mounting back to hell. In other words, he's completely discombobled and trying to figure out where he is. And he sees this different view of Satan's hairy leg.
Like sticking straight up.
Yeah.
Now, some of this also comes from Professor Andrew J. Samosin's article, The Gravity of Hell, The Gravity of Hades, rather. And he gets into a little Miltonian physics as well. Milton's Paradise Lost, of course, we mentioned this briefly earlier in this podcast or in the other one about hell. In Milton's Paradise Lost, Lucifer is a more relatable character, a sympathetic character. And
he's the Dark Angel.
He's the Dark Angel, and we get to learn about his fall. So Samosin looks at this and realizes that naturally Lucifer's fall from heaven to hell is the perfect measuring stick to figure out what is the distance between heaven and hell. So in this article, he looks at Lucifer's descent from heaven to hell and says, well, this would be a great way of measuring the distance between heaven and hell if we could figure out, if we could apply some equations to this. And that's what he does in this paper. He applies a lot of mathematical computation to what he can glean from the text. And basically it says, him, Satan, the almighty power, hurled headlong, flaming from the eternal sky with hideous ruin and combustion down to bottomless perdition. And apparently it takes him about 9 days to reach between heaven and hell. So he starts breaking that down. How great a distance would that be? And then you also have to wonder, okay, if this occurred not long after the Big Bang, then maybe certain laws are not applying.
Right.
Is he bound by the speed of light? Is he bound by the speed of a physical object, or is he surpassing it? So it could take, 340 million years, he figures, if he was to reach the center of the Milky Way. But it could take take a much shorter amount of time if he's going faster than light. So it's some wonderful thought experimentation that's going on in that article.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, hell is a wonderful idea to play with, to explore our universe.
All right, well, there you go. Hopefully we did not lose you too much in the descriptions of hell and the descriptions of weather in the real world. But again, look at some of these charts that we're talking about. Look on the website, and I think that should help it all make a little more sense. It's very much in keeping with some of these papers that are out there about how DNA works, how genetics work in Harry Potter, how the solar system works in Game of Thrones. But then it also hints at something greater. The idea that science is this way that we can feel the unknown. We can reach out and touch things that we haven't yet explored yet and try to figure out what is a black hole? What is dark matter? But then we can also reach them into the imagined worlds and try and figure out the limits of those worlds as well.
Yeah, I mean, what are the coordinates of Satan's crotch?
Exactly. Science is still out on that, by the way. So, in the meantime, if you would like to get in touch with us, you can find us in the usual ways. Again, that website is stufftoblowyourmind.com. You can also find us on social media. We're on Twitter as Blow the Mind. We're on Facebook and Tumblr as Stuff to Blow Your Mind. On YouTube, we are Mind Stuff Show.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.